You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by. Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 134. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
I feel that we've been on 134 for 10 episodes. I feel like we're not moving from 130.
Last episode was 133, and then before that, 132.
All right, I'm fine.
Trust me on this.
All right, I trust you. I never look. I don't even know how many episodes we have, so...
You don't even listen, so what do you care?
That is true.
Well, today we are going to be talking about the last batch of Severin films that have come out. Some pretty fun ones in there, and things that a lot of people have been talking about, and we just decided, you know, shit, we might as well cover these.
I must say, Severin is knocking it out of the park.
They are.
You know, I mean...
This is the sultry sounds of Brad Henderson episode. You were just talking quietly into the microphone.
No, I'm just saying, like, with their recent releases over the course... Like, you know, they've been around for a while, but it seems recently that they've really, really kicked it up a few notches. They've always been a great company. I mean, I remember picking up, you know, Screwballs 2, I believe they're now out of print, you know, original Inglorious and Inglorious Bastards. So they've always been on my radar, but as of recent, they've really kicked it up a notch. So I'm really happy with the work that they're doing.
Yeah, whoever is doing the acquisitions, tip of the hat to you, whoever's doing that. But no, yeah, that I was going to open with that as well, because we started the show a few years back. They were one of the first companies that would, you know, send us screeners, which I really appreciated, because it's like pulling teeth when you're starting up something new and trying to get, you know, companies to at least send a review copy. And they were one of the first ones to actually, you know, give us a chance and do that, and very much appreciated that they went on board and, you know, and did that. And, yeah, like this past year, I've seen a step up in the titles, like just some fun, obscure stuff. And that's what I love, is discovering obscure titles, good or bad. It's fun to have this sense of discovery. And for me, it's been really fun with a lot of these, especially, I mean, you all know, like, my feelings about Shauna Video, but what they're doing with Intervision is, even if the movies aren't my bag, it's just, you know, you're going to get something batshit and fun, you know, so it's been a lot of fun kind of discovering movies and seeing, and what I love about them is they don't go overboard with any of the bells and whistles. Like, I think one of their titles had a slipcover, but I mean, they're not crazy with these, you know, any $45 steel books. They're not overboard with any of the packaging. It's straightforward. You know that pretty much every release is going to have a handful of special features. You're going to learn about the film. The cover art's going to be really good cover art, and they're going to use as much of the original posters as they can, I believe. And it's, I don't know, they're just straightforward, affordable, straightforward, and you're going to have fun discovering, you know, some of these films.
Yeah, I guess it was back with, I think when they very first, I mean, because they've been around for a little bit. You know, they've done, like I said, Screwballs and, you know, Birdemic and BMX Bandits and movies like that. But it wasn't, I think, I can't remember, maybe a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, they had the release of Dead Kids, Patrick and Thirst. And then the, like, a couple weeks after that, or a few weeks after, they had Bloody Birthday, The Baby, and Bloody Moon. And then after that, they just went off, like, they just were doing so many releases. They did, you know, the Vampire Lesbos. They did, you know, Nightmare Castle, you know, Turkey Shoot, which was a huge one for me. Mm-hmm. But now, this past year, with like Dr. Butcher MD and Burial Ground and things like that, they are in the Sinful Dwarf. They are really killing it, man. So
yeah. No, I think the only one they really did a lot of packaging for, which was really fucking awesome, what they did with the slipcovers was she killed an XSD. I can't freaking talk this morning. Screamcast brought to you by Extreme Fatigue. No, whoa. She killed an Ecstasy and Vampiros Lesbos. Like, those Jess Franco films, they really did an awesome job with how they did the slipcovers with the window in it. And, like, I think back then I was ranting about slipcovers, and I said this was an example of it done right, where it was just, it added to the art direction of.
Well, also, their releases aren't $29.99 either.
Yeah, exactly. And the only other one they did a slipcover was Burial Ground with some new artwork there. But yeah, a lot to talk about with them. We're going to be discussing eight of their films, seven of their releases, eight films at least, and we'll talk about what they got coming down the line here with a few things and that we'll be discussing probably in the near future. But first, we need to dive into what's on our doorstep.
Oh shit.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
What do you want to go first?
I'm going to go first because I have been slamming these Severn releases. And like I said, we have some home projects we're doing here. So me sitting down and watching movies has been like freaking like pulling teeth. So I haven't been able to sit down and watch anything other than what's for the show. But I did want to mention really quick that we've discussed The Void here and there the past couple weeks. It had a physical release through DiabolicDVD.com. And I think it was like $25 or $27. And it had some extras on there. I had ordered the UK Blu-ray from Signature Entertainment, and I was unsure if it had any special features or anything. And this was about $10 or $12 cheaper than the Diabolic one. And I got it in the mail, and I can confirm that it has all the special features that are on the exclusive from Diabolic DVD. And it is also region free, so it cost me $15.
Whoa!
So if you're someone who wants to buy the physical copy and you don't want to pay $27, $25, you want to pay like $15 after shipping and everything. I think it's like £9.99, £9 or maybe £10 UK. So anyway, and it has a slip cover. Listen to this. Slipcover porn.
Oh. That sounds so good.
So if you want to grab the physical copy of The Void, this does have all the bells and whistles, and confirmed, because I confirmed it on my Xbox One, region free.
Oh,
that's all I got, man. All the rest of the shit that I watched was for the show.
You know, I don't have much either. I can go now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. I watched a Wild Eye film, Wild Eye releasing, of course. Amityville Exorcism, which I thought was a clever plot. I was not a fan of the film so much. There is some goofy moments, and it is comical. It does make you chuckle a few times. But the plot is basically a carpenter who took wood from the old Amityville house, was building a new house, and through the wood, the spirits come and attack. I thought that was clever in itself, and funny. But the movie, it has its ups and downs. But yeah, it's, if you're into like kind of the goofy, low budget, films that Wild Eye puts out, I suggest it at least. I think you would be mildly amused. Next up was, Satanic. It's a film released by Magnet, I guess, a couple weeks ago, a few weeks ago. It's about a group of, teens that are on their way to Coachella, but they stop in, I know, they mentioned Coachella, like, they mention it like fucking 10 times in the movie, and I couldn't help but laugh each time.
Go to Coachella, bro.
So it's two couples, and they stop kind of inner city LA to stop at like the Tate House, to stop just basically kind of like a mini little satanic ghost tour that they take around town. They reside in a motel where, somebody was, sacrificed, and in the meantime, they're going around to, this kind of, black, dark cult. I forget the name of the actual store, but it's a place that sells satanic shit, like, you know, satanic Bible and
like Spencer's.
No, this is like more of a legit place where these people believe it. So they go there like some shit goes down with the store owners and the people that are running the store. And so these kids decide to follow them after they leave just, you know, for shits and giggles because they really want to see something crazy. So they're hoping that since these guys are so weird that they, show them, you know, something nutty or wherever they're going. So they tail them to this house and they watch one of these sacrifices that they look like they're going to do. The teens intervene. And the girl that was going to be sacrificed was, ends up, one of the guys drops his cell phone. So they, so she calls the teens and says, "Hey, let's meet up. I'll give you your phone back." And you slowly realize that, this cult was, exiling her because she's too hardcore for them. And then it goes into kind of more of what the title is, Satanic. It's okay. It does have a very, very good 15 minutes. It really picks up and man, there's some cool shit that goes down. It just takes a while to get there. And you know, it takes its time, but it's well done. The actors are, you know, okay. It's a fun little popcorn horror flick. If you want to watch something that's decent, you're not going to blow your mind or anything. And then next up was The Ones Below, another Magnet horror title. A couple who recently moves into a kind of a two-story flat. Bottom floor is occupied by some other tenants. And they realize that the tenants below them are having a baby as well. So the two women get together. You know, they're pregnant. They go swimming and do their shit. And they invite them over one night for dinner. And it kind of get a little uncomfortable with kind of the topics they're talking about because the one couple that the film focuses on didn't really want to have the baby. And weren't really trying. And eventually she's like, "Yeah, I just thought we would do it." While the other family has been trying for a long time to conceive a child. So they get a little offended. Kind of a mild argument occurs. The family from downstairs goes to leave. The woman falls, because of, a cat and a light bulb and all this other shit. She falls and she loses the baby. And then your film starts. So it has a very eerie setting. It doesn't even have a score. I can't even remember music playing, which I thought was really effective. It has elements of you know, stuff like The Shining and films like that. But it's just, it's one of those movies where you feel like you're holding like a stick of dynamite, but you're not looking to see how far the wick is yet. Because you're just super uncomfortable that things are going to explode like at any time. Great job by the actors, great job by the director. Like it's really effective, but man, I tell you, it lost me. Like I was like 100% in, until kind of everything goes down. And then I was like, man, I thought they had something special there, but, instead, not so much. And actually, last but not least, I got to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh!
Which Willow was super stoked about. She was obsessed with seeing, you know, Baby Groot, which I was not really looking forward to. But I tell you, I was wrong. It doesn't focus on Baby Groot at all. You don't really even see Groot a ton. You know, he's just standing. Just there.
Dude, James Gunn is a smart filmmaker, though. Like, people thinking that he's going to jump into the whole, all into the Marvel machine. Like, no, man, he's a smart fucking filmmaker, and I respect him a lot. So, yeah, I'm taking my kids to this, I think, today.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but the emotional stuff, and the heartstrings are a little heavier on that side on this one. It's definitely more, you know, because the first one, they're getting to know one another. I gotta say, and you mentioned about James Gunn's filmmaking capabilities. I'm not a Marvel fan. I do not like these movies that are coming out. I think pretty much
they've gone downhill. They've gotten cookie cutter.
Well, yeah, but I honestly think that's like 90% of them. I don't think any of them are very good. I think they all are just cash grabs. We have, how many films with Thor? So we got let's just take Iron Man, because he has three films out, right?
Okay.
So there's Iron Man, there's three films. We also have two Avengers films, right? And we have the Civil War movie, right?
Yeah, which is technically, I guess, a Captain America movie, but it's an Avengers movie.
Right, but Iron Man he's in the film most of the time.
Yeah, they placed all their bets in Iron Man.
Well, no.
Tony Stark is in everything.
No. Don't go away from what I'm trying to say here. All right, so we have six movies with Iron Man.
Right.
I understand Tony Stark is supposed to be an asshole. Robert Downey Jr. does portray that character well. But I would not care if Iron Man died. I would not shed a tear. I would not shed a tear. I would not feel any emotion for Thor. I wouldn't feel any emotion for Hulk. I wouldn't feel any emotion for Black Widow. The only one that I can kind of feel for and understand, just because I think he portrays the character correctly, is Captain America.
Ant-Man.
No, oh, Ant-Man can – I really hope he dies. but what I'm saying is that we have this whole universe created around these characters. And I understand people like them because they've had exposition with the comic books, so they understand, maybe they enjoy, but there actually is no emotional attachment to these characters. But I can feel for a fucking raccoon. I feel for an animated fucking raccoon and a goddamn tree. In Guardians of the Galaxy.
The first Guardians of the Galaxy, when Rocket starts talking about how, like, being experimented on or whatever, not really knowing exactly what he is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he takes off his shirt and he has these like scars, like, oh my God.
But what I'm saying is that there's a lot of dialogue in the second film between Rocket and Yondu and choices that are made. I'm like, why am I getting teary-eyed for a fucking raccoon right now when I can't even feel any emotion whatsoever in any of the Marvel films? And I watch them with an open mind. I invest myself into this. Like, even though I don't like Marvel Universe films. I've seen everything. Just because my kid wants to, I have friends that like to, you know, I'll go see Thor Ragnarok. I'll watch the movies. I'm never going to say no to a movie. You know, I've said many times, I get frustrated on the show and I've said, I'm fucking done. Like after Doctor Strange, I said, I'm fucking done with Marvel. I'm not watching anymore. But then, you know, these other movies come out and I'm a hypocrite and I fucking go see them. But still to this day, I have no fucking feelings for anything like that. But James Gunn can make me tear up for a fucking animated raccoon. Marvel, you're doing something incorrect. But anyways, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is not as good as the first one, but it's fun, and the emotion and like I said, it tugs on your heartstrings a lot harder than the first one did. Mainly because, like I said, the first one, they're getting to know one another. This one, they've been together for a while. So now it's more family-oriented.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Marvel,
and Kurt Russell's in it.
Take fucking note from fucking Fast and the Furious movies. Those movies are fucking stupid and silly. But Jesus Christ, we love every goddamn character in the fucking movie. Why? Because they're at least well written and portrayed. You know, by not decent. I mean, they are decent actors because they make you feel for them. But I feel for those goddamn people in these fucking stupid movies. So it's not hard. It's not hard to make you have, you know, I mean, I guess it is if they can't accomplish it. But I mean, there's a sequence in Guardians of the Galaxy where we have two characters that never really interacted with one another before, between Yondu and Rocket. Yeah, they talk, you know, they're in the first film a little bit together, but they're kind of in this movie together for a very, very short time, just them. And I tell you what, man, there's a conversation that happens in that movie that's just like, Jesus Christ, like, this is so fucking well done, and we've only been with these characters just for a few minutes. And you know, you get teary-eyed. Hey, that's what you call good writing and good directing. So bravo to James Gunn. I know he listens to the show, and he'll probably email me. but anyways, yeah, go see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I honestly think this one will definitely surpass the original. Like I said, I do like the first one better, but I think this one comes a close second. So
cool. You know, speaking of James Gunn, we really should try to get him on for Slither. Note. Let's start working on it now. Let's do it. All right. You heard it here, folks. If it happens, it was my idea. If it doesn't happen, never mind. Forget I said anything. All right. Moving right along. I have some announcements here we go through. Those of you asking where BJ is, she was planning on being with us, but we've been doing these in the mornings, and it's hard enough for us to even get up. And so I think last week she accidentally slept through, and that's probably what happened right now. But it's all good. We, you know, these goddamn time zones, man, they're killing me. We'll work something out. We'll figure it out. All right, so normally, I will go and say if we have any new patrons. We do not have any new ones this week, but you can check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/scream_cast. We've done a few late night episodes. We'll be doing more. And so if you're a $5 patron, you'll be able to hear those, and you'll be able to actually interact with those and actually create a talking point for us. So the $3, you get our episodes a day early or 2 days early, depending on when, you know, I get these shows edited. But basically, as soon as I edit this sucker and upload it, you get to hear it. And then we have the $1 level where you're just throwing us a tip. You're just giving us the tip.
Just the tip.
Just the tip. And but we appreciate all of you guys, all the patrons. This is your money you're giving to us each month, and we really do appreciate it, and it really is helping make the show better. So also, you can follow us along on Twitter during the show, twitter.com/scream_cast. Anyway, you all, if you're listening, you know our Twitter. But you can find all of our social media links over at thescreamcast.com. And finally, these announcements here, we have been meaning to mention this, but haven't got around to it just because it hurts. James Harris, otherwise known as Doc Terror, he when I first started this show up, he was very instrumental in kind of answering a lot of my questions about starting a blog. He was diagnosed with cancer a couple years back, and he recently passed away. So there is going to be a fundraiser happening. A lot of people in the horror community, which is amazing, are coming together to raise money for his wife Nicole and his daughters, just for the family to help them, because you know. Friend of the show Chad Ecto Young, he runs Horror Movie Barbecue, and he was friends with James Harris. He is leading up a GoFundMe raffle where a lot of blogs, a lot of people throughout everywhere, even his wife Nicole, donated three of James's personal enamel pins, and they're using this to raise money. We're sending them a box of goodies, and as soon as that link goes live on the 14th of May, we'll be tweeting that out and putting that up on our website. And if you can, please participate. It's going to be a really good thing to help take care of James Harris's family. So, trying to think what else I can say about that. But a Fright Rags did an exclusive shirt with his kind of character that he created for his website too. So you know, it's just one of those things when one of our peers in the horror community passes away, I always see the community come together, and it's a beautiful thing. So kind of gets me emotional. We'll let you guys know about that when that happens.
Yeah, that's a little too sad for me, but rest in peace, brother.
Yeah, he was a really good guy. All right, moving right along here, we got some news with Josh Obershaw, and then we'll be diving in to the last batch of films from Severn. And Josh Obershaw is here, right here, right now. I will be waiting for you. Wait, that's not right. Josh is here, joining us to talk about some releases. I almost got caught up in a Richard Marx song. I apologize.
That's no problem. How are you doing, Sean?
Doing very well.
Good.
Welcome, good sir. And, oh, happy fucking birthday, man.
That's kind of you to say so. It was a pretty chill birthday.
Yeah, hope you had a treat yourself day. I always do that on my birthdays. It's a treat yourself.
That is exactly what I did. I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and I had a really good time with that.
Very nice. Well deserved, sir. All right, so what do you have for us so we can plan on emptying out our bank accounts once again?
Not a whole lot this week. It was kind of light, but I want to start off with our sponsor, Vinegar Syndrome. Their June 2017 package was just announced. And the titles we've got are Nurse Sherry, A Touch of Genie, the DVD only Never Sleep Alone, and another Peekarama double feature of Pleasure Maze and Lover's Lane. Now, you can get the entire package for 40% off until June 1st, 35% off until June 12th, and then it's going to be 30% off until the street date, which is going to be June 27th. And they're going to keep doing this little trend they got right now, where if you just want the Blu-ray DVD combo packs, which is, again, Nurse Sherry and A Touch of Genie, then you can get that just by itself. And I think as far as the discount,
Yeah, you're saving about $20.
Exactly. For the Blu-ray DVD packages, Nurse Sherry and A Touch of Genie, it's going to be 30% off until the street date. It's $46.17 right now.
Yeah. You can afford another Blu-ray if you buy this package.
Exactly.
And even more if you get the full-on package, you're saving like $40.
Yeah.
So savings all around.
Definitely. So that's what we got from Vinegar Syndrome. Moving right along to Shout Factory, specifically Scream Factory. I just have a couple of updates as far as like bonus feature-wise. Today saw the release of Gus Van Sant's remake of Psycho, and not much in the I know, right? Okay, to be fair, I've never seen it. It's just that.
Sorry.
It's just that I don't know. It doesn't really. I don't think I would enjoy that.
I've never been a fan. You're probably about to get into special features, so I'll let you get into it here. There's a lot. If you're a fan of learning about film, especially like even with Gus Van Sant, like. What do they got for us? Sell me on this, Josh. What if I don't like this film? Why the hell would I spend some money?
I guess if you're that much of a psycho completist, yeah, go ahead and get this. What you're going to be get the only new bonus feature they got is an audio commentary with Rob Galluzzo, who's of course the co-host of Shockwaves, and he's the director of the Psycho Legacy. He's going to be doing a commentary with editor Amy Huddleston. So, I guess that alone would be the price of admission, just hearing them talk about it. Of course, they've got the audio commentary. Yeah.
I hear that's actually really a really good and really fun commentary.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah.
I'd be willing to get it just for that. I mean, there's also an audio commentary with Gus Van Sant and Hayes and Vince Vaughn. But I'm more interested in the commentary with Amy Huddleston and Rob Galluzzo. Other than that, you've got Psychopath, The Making of Psycho, and Trailers and Still Gallery. It's kind of light on the bonus features, but that new audio commentary, that might put me over the edge. Maybe. Kind of.
Well, I know the original DVD was pretty stacked, so it sounds like they had a lot to bring over. And the only thing new, I guess, is that new commentary. But like I said, Rob Galluzzo was... He posted on a Facebook or something about it, and he said that they laughed a lot. So that means, you know, it's probably pretty damn entertaining, and it sounds like hopefully it was a pretty candid, you know, commentary.
Sounds like you're selling me on this than me selling you on this.
I know, huh? I'll add it to my cart, and when there's a huge sale and it drops to a certain price point, maybe I'd get it.
There you go.
The film is an interesting experiment, and I think it shows that making a shot-for-shot remake isn't necessarily the best idea.
I guess when you put it that way, it's not too bad of an investment. Something else that's also light in the special features department is the 1980 film Windows, which is directed by cinematographer Gordon Willis. Yeah, the only bonus features of notes on this release, there's a new high-definition transfer of the film taken from the inner positive. But the other new bonus feature is an in-conversation interview with actress Talia Shire. I think that alone is going to be interesting. So, I don't know. This is another one of those, like you said, maybe if it drops down in price a little, it'd be worth picking up. I mean, especially... Since this is a film that takes place in New York City in 1980, that would be, you know, worth the price of admission, at least for me.
Yeah.
So that's it as far as Scream Factory and Shout Factory. So let's see what else I got for you peoples. Oh, that isn't it for Scream Factory, because The Lawnmower Man. We've got deals on The Lawnmower Man. And now I know you guys have talked about the director's cut. I guess it was the last episode or two.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is going to be included. This is going to be a two-disc set. Disc number one is the theatrical cut. Disc number two is going to be the director's cut. One thing I want to point out about the director's cut. Now the theatrical cut is going to be a 4K scan of an interpositive. The director's cut is a 4K of the interpositive with additional director's cut footage from the original camera negative. So keep that in mind if you're considering this collector's edition, because there might be a little bit of difference in quality between the two elements. There may not be, but just a heads up.
Yeah, it's not like they took it from like a work print VHS. I mean, I know that when they did Manhunter, when they did that director's cut, they had some shoddy stuff to work with. In this case, it sounds like you're trading really good quality for like maybe really, really good quality. You know, it sounds like it's not that bad of a trade. It sounds like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. I'm just trying to.
I mean, it's got Cyber Monkey, so that's Robo Monkey. I don't even care how it looks. Just give me some Robo Monkey.
Sure. I'm just covering my ass. I don't want to like sell somebody on this and then watch the director's cut. I'm like, it looks like shit. So just being cautious.
Nah, they've been pretty good. They've been really good on their director's cuts.
Agreed. Well, the other thing of note is a new featurette called Cyber God, Creating the Lawnmower Man. It features interviews with Brett Leonard, who's the co-writer and director of the movie. You got Jeff Fahey, editor Alan Baumgarten, makeup effects artist Michael Deek, and special effects coordinator Frank Sigilia? Sorry if I butcher your name.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's also deleted scenes. There's a little electronic press kit, which I'm very curious watching because I know it's from 1991, 92. That era is probably going to be standard def, so it's going to look all VHS-y. So I've never seen The Lawnmower Man before. Full disclosure, but this is enough for me to invest in.
Oh, man.
I know. I've missed out.
I'm a fan. I like it. I'd say it's not an amazing movie, but it's a fun little kind of window into the whole how everyone thought virtual reality was going to take over. It's kind of fun watching it now as we're almost getting into another little renaissance of VR. So yeah, it's a fun little time capsule of a film. Pierce Brosnan. I mean, you know, come on.
I don't know. Just listening to you guys talk about Lawnmower Man 2, I'm more stoked about that one than the first movie, to be honest with you.
Oh, Lawnmower Man 2. In the right mindset, that's a lot of fun.
Well, the other only thing I've got left, you see, we got a little bit of news. I don't know if this is confirmed or not, but apparently the next title in the Vestron series is going to be Warlock.
Yeah.
Not only that, I saw something on Instagram about working on Warlock, and one of the hashtags was Armageddon. So that kind of leads me to believe that it's going to be another collection like Wishmaster.
Yeah, that'd be great. And side note, Wishmaster, finally, the whole collection dropped to like $22. So those of you like me who bought it for like $35 or $40, we're all kind of weeping right now. But
I'm kind of tempted now.
I'm trying to see how many films are in Warlock. Like, is there a trilogy? Is it a trilogy?
It is a trilogy, yes.
Oh, man, I've never seen the third one.
I don't think I've ever seen the second one.
If they neither have I don't think. If they release a trilogy, the first Warlock is a lot of fun. Like, I like it a lot. And I have an import. I can't remember where it's from, but I do have an import Blu-ray. It looks fantastic. So, and I think that one even had some special features, but I've talked about it before on the show at some point. But, yeah, it'll be fun, man, if they release all three of these in a Blu-ray set. That'd be a lot of fun. But for sure, yeah, we're pretty much positive that the original will be coming out through the Vestron series.
That is exciting. The last time I saw it on a cheap Lionsgate DVD, and I don't know. I would love to see it. I would love to see it in Blu-ray. I mean, as far as like collections are concerned, this one is a no-brainer. Like Wishmaster, I've never seen Wishmaster, so I'm kind of wishy-washy. Warlock, on the other hand, I'm definitely throwing down money for that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to do it, Sean. That's all the news I have.
Very cool.
Like I said, pretty light, but pretty exciting.
All right, Josh. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll see you guys next week.
Well, like we said at the top of the show, Severin Films is has been stepping up their game the past couple of years, and it's been a lot of fun to it sounds bad, like saying stepping up their game, like they've never been bad, but the acquisitions have become a lot more fun to discover is what I mean to say for me personally. So we're going to be going through kind of like what we do for Vinegar Syndrome. We're going to go through their past handful of releases here and let you guys know what we thought about them. There will be links in the show notes to each of these. And I believe that Mike at grindhousevideo.com, I believe he stocks all of these. So we'll have links to all those in the show notes. So you can grab these as you're listening and want to grab a few of these. We're going to be giving our honest opinions about the films. And I know a lot of people, not a lot. I mean, a handful of people that I know who review things do a lot of softball lobs to companies they like, and they're not constructively critical. And I think that we on this show have established ourselves in a position to be, you know, to give constructive criticism when it's due to a label. And I think even with Vinegar Syndrome, with other labels that we talk about, we always talk about the good and the bad, and it's not meant as a diss, or we're not being mean-spirited, unless that company will give us some shit back. We've retaliated a little bit, but you know who we were talking about if you listen to the show for the past few years. So we're gonna be talking about these films, and overall, though, like, Severin does good work. Like, they're a label that you should be, you should buy confidently from. They're a label that does the work when needed, and their price points are always in a ballpark that's manageable. And so we have a lot of respect for Severin. So let's dive right into these, Brad. I kind of put these down in a list, no particular order. But we'll just start talking about these. The first one that I'm going to mention briefly is a film, Brad, that you have talked about already, but I hadn't seen yet. So I was like, well, shit, I need to pop this in and take a look for myself.
Shit.
It is Franco E. Prosperi's Wild Beasts.
In the cat area. Oh, Christ.
Now, this was his final movie, and I know you talked about the film. It's an animals attack film. PCP gets unloaded into the water system of the zoo, and basically all the animals get high and turn into man-killing maniacs and rampage the streets. This takes place in Rome. And what other films has Franco Prosperi done? Did we talk about that when you talked about it briefly, Brad?
A tiny bit. You should talk about Savage Beast, though.
Wasn't this called Savage Beast as well?
Oh, I see. I always say Savage Beast. It's supposed
alternate
to be
alternate title.
Supposed to be Wild Beast, but whatever.
It does have an alternate title that I can't seem to find right now. I think it was called Savage Beast.
No, it was on the posters. I believe it was. I mean, yeah, the U.S. Yeah. release, but I've known it as Savage Beast for a while. So whatever.
Yeah. No worries. So anyway, my thoughts on the film, it was exactly what I was expecting. Just a crazy animals attack flick, some really good gore here and there. Like Brad, you had mentioned the very awkward nudity by a young, very young actress. Yeah, it caught me by surprise, but it was tastefully done. I don't know. These Italians. I don't know. But yeah, they definitely would not happen today. And if it did, there would be some harsh words. This was 84. he's Italian. I don't know. But yeah, like it basically took it out of the rewatch pile. And I was like, well, you know, a little weird. But you know, if you're curious about this film though, don't let that sway you. It's just a crazy Italian animals attack flick, and if you haven't seen it, you can feel confident to check it off your list and give it a watch. But yeah, I was looking at the director. He hasn't really done a whole lot. He did some documentaries, some Italian documentaries. He did a film called Mondo Candido in 75, then a movie called Goodbye Uncle Tom in 71.
Oh, Jesus.
So he really has...
That's the director of fucking Goodbye Uncle Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's a... two documentary filmmakers go back in time to the pre-Civil War American South to film the slave trade.
Yeah, dude. Fucking watch that movie. It fucking will... Jesus Christ. I had no idea that was the same director. Yeah, good.
Rated X?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
That movie is fucking...
It is on my...
I don't know if it's available anywhere. I'm
very curious.
I don't think it's
available. I don't think it is either.
Yeah.
He's Severin. You guys working on that? What is that?
I don't... I remember... dude, I remember seeing that in the theater and people walked out.
Wow.
At Fantastic Fest. Yeah, people had to get up and walk out. Huh. Yeah, because it was the
interesting
Italian I don't know who Yeah, because apparently, what's his name? Refn had it restored or something. Because one of the songs that's actually used in the film, he used in Drive. And he's a fan of the film. But yeah, I believe Goodbye Uncle Tom's the movie that people, like certain people walked out of just because of how uncomfortable racist this is. So, anyways,
right.
If you do get a chance to see it,
I'm reading some things about it.
Yeah, if you do get a chance to see it, I recommend it. But yeah, I think you have to go by other means to see that film.
Yeah, yep. I can see if a company wouldn't want to.
No, I don't think anybody's really ballsy enough to touch it or that could afford it.
Blue Underground released this as a part of a collection on DVD. It is available to watch digitally on Amazon Video for a couple bucks.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's the Italian
standard
version.
Definition.
I don't know if it's the Italian.
Gotcha. Because there is a Canadian version cut down about half hour if it's missing.
Right.
So
the original. Original director's thing is over 2 hours. I think what it is now is like an hour and a half or like an hour and 45. So,
okay.
Yeah, have fun with that, guys.
I'm super curious, but it's, you know, I can definitely
things don't make me uncomfortable, but that movie actually made me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do.
Yeah. Well, moving right along here from Wild Beast, because like I said, you spent a lot of time on it already, so I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. It was a couple episodes back you talked about it, and I'll put the link in the show notes of when you talk about it. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, Brad, did you get to watch The Killing of America?
I am an American, and I killed Americans. I am a human being, and I killed human beings. And I did it in my society.
10-30 to 20.
Drop the gun. Drop the gun.
America the Beautiful has become America the Violent. This is the country that produces an attempted murder every 3 minutes. A murder victim every 20 minutes. 27,000 murders a year. And the number is growing. No one is safe.
But when I saw him there that night, he seemed like a saint. Every morning when I get up, I wish that son of a gun were alive.
For the first time ever, anywhere, you can see the true face of the evil that is destroying our country. You will meet the new breed of killer.
This broad I kill. This broad I've never seen before.
They're veterans, honor students, advocates of law and order. They will cry.
Mama, I killed thee.
Bang!
They will laugh. They will tell you why they have to kill.
To shock her with a cold metal, and a week later I murdered my mother. I said, no, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. I just stabbed to death and cut the throat of an innocent young woman. As I'm sitting there with a severed head in my hand, talking to it.
Every scream, every cry for help, every image of madness is real. No matter how paralyzing the shock.
You're the mother.
Know the truth and survive the killing of America.
It's okay. Nobody's getting hurt. Just come on in.
Well,
hey,
Mom.
Hey, come on in.
You better come on in.
Come in, please.
Come on in. It's too late now. Grab your seat over there.
I've talked about it before, but I do want to reiterate that it is a documentary worth seeing. I thought it was really good, and especially with this new political climate we're in, I feel like it's even more hard-hitting. It is using real footage. It's a documentary about real murder and America's obsession with violence and murder and true crime stories and things like that. This was back in 1981. Very, very affecting documentary. I wasn't prepared for it. A lot of people say it was super uncomfortable to watch. I thought it was fascinating. And people compared it to like Faces of Death, you know, because the first Faces of Death actually had a premise and something that the filmmakers were trying to convey, like a message they were trying to convey about violence and things like that. This upstages it. This is actually a far better example of a documentarian exploring these ideas, and it is one of my top documentaries of all time. Now it is definitely worth seeing if you're interested in this. It does not shy away. It is the uncut version. Does not shy away from showing real murder on screen. But I feel like with that cut out, it would not be the same film. It would not be as hard hitting. And like I said, this was back in 81, but it's even more affecting now, I think, because back in 81, they saw this trend, this trend of America's obsession with violence. And I mean, fast forward, you know, over 30 years, it was almost prophetic with, our society. So it's worth watching. I would love to watch this with some like-minded friends and go out for to a bar and just talk about it. And it would definitely bring up some really good philosophical type conversations. And it's really good. I think it's an important documentary that finally people can watch now. So I would definitely give it a very enthusiastic recommendation if you haven't seen it and if you're interested in things like that. Next up, let's talk about 1976's Drive-In Massacre.
On August 10th, in a California drive-in, it all began. It will grip you like nothing you have ever witnessed before. It is absolute and total horror.
Will you cut it out?
Come on, Alan.
Sweetheart.
Was it 76? Is this before Halloween and Friday the 13th? And it's cool kind of seeing these slashers before they start getting into the the template of that Halloween basically started, because like we saw with Don't Answer the Phone, which I'm not sure what year Don't Answer the Phone was released off the top of my head, but I think it did that predate Halloween as well?
Don't Answer the Phone? No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, basically, Drive-In Massacre kind of follows the same thing a little bit, wherein there is a horrific murder, and the first killing in this film had me standing up and applauding. It is so well done. It looks so good. It's fantastic. The rest of the film does not reach that level. But following this grisly murder, we're following a couple bumbling detectives as they try to solve this murder and track down who the killer is. This isn't a high body count type slasher. It is kind of meandering in a way. I mean, you edit this down to like today's standards, you got like a half hour short film. But I had some fun with this. It got boring in parts and tested my patience a little bit. But the opening is so great. And then, you know, there's some fun to be had in here if you're patient. But I had a lot of fun for the most part with this. Brad, what is your reaction to Drive-In Massacre?
I think it starts off strong. I think it loses its steam in the middle, but I gotta give it props for what it was trying to do. It has some decent actors as far as like George Buck Flower being in the film and being kind of creepy. And, if I'm not mistaken, he, co-wrote this film, which, George Buck Flower has been in, Jesus Christ. You may not know the name. You should, but if you don't, you see him, you're going to be like, oh shit, he's in every fucking thing.
Yeah. He usually plays, oh God, that guy.
Yeah. Usually plays a, homeless drunk man. I think the film definitely picks up in the last 20 minutes. I think it has a fun reveal, in a way, I guess a reveal. but I think the ending text on the screen is a lot of fun. I think being in the theater.
Yeah, this is meant to be shown in drive-ins.
Yeah, I think if you were in a drive-in and you watched it and then the ending happened, you'd be like, oh, shit, this is fucking cool, man. I don't know. It's a weird, you know, like, just, like, dirty,
yeah,
like, 70s exploitation slasher, which you don't really have those. You don't even have, you know, grimy exploitation slashers in the 80s. I don't know if too many people tried this. I can't really think of anything off the top of my head.
Well, it's very like the movie's formula is you got a man and a woman at the drive-in. One of them wants to watch the movie and one of them wants to screw. It's basically the setup each time someone's in the car. Either one or both of them will end up meeting their demise. So you have those scenes in the drive-in.
It's almost like a PSA, don't fuck in the drive-in.
Yeah. And then you follow the police detectives as they're trying to interview people. And that's where I felt it loses its steam mostly is in these either interrogation or discussion settings. Because, I mean, this is like we saw with Don't Answer the Phone with these detectives, like there's no computers, there's nothing. It's just, how do we solve this murder? How do we investigate? Well, we sit and talk for a while. Maybe we'll call someone. Maybe let's go interview. Let's go to someone's house and talk to them. You know, sit and talk. And then we're back to the drive-in. The drive-in owner had some impeccable fashion sense, though.
I think a lot of people in this film have some good
fantastic 70s fashion. Is it who was the guy? Was it? Oh God, I can't remember the act. I don't know the actor's name, but he's bald, has a beard, and he's always wearing some sort of colored turtleneck, with a suit jacket of some sort and a big old wooden cross.
Well, another thing we focus on, aside from the keen fashion sense, is the fucking dialogue in the movie, too. There's some lines, like, I remember talking about Don't Answer the Phone, like, how there's just some weird pieces of dialogue in the film. And there's a movie called, and if you haven't seen it, called Lady Terminator, that I consider has some of the best dialogue of all time. But there's a part in the film where, He walks into the police station and he like looks at the officer that's eating and he goes, you better watch, you better watch out. You might be eating your dad.
Yes.
And it's like, what the fuck? Like,
oh, because it's, people call cops pigs, right? So he's eating a ham sandwich. So
I know, but still like,
get it.
Yeah. But there's I actually wrote in my notes, he also says, you really want to talk about this piece of puke.
Piece of puke.
Like, piece of puke. Who says piece of puke? Piece of puke. I mean, it rolls normally off the tongue nicely. Piece of puke.
I guess normally you would say, hey, you want to talk to this puke? But the piece of puke, like, he's not even giving the guy a full credit of being a full, you know, splattering a puke. He's talking, he's a chunk of puke. I mean, that's low, man. That's a, that's a low blow.
Oh, and then, I have it in my notes too. We had a witness. You crawled out of your car over to the victims. What were you doing? Pissing on the hubcaps? And then the guy says, I just wanted to beat my dick or beat my meat. I wanted to beat my meat. Like, pissing on the hubcaps. Was that a thing in the 70s, pissing on hubcaps? Did people do that?
Maybe. I mean, you know, there could be some stuff lost in translation.
I don't know.
Just because who knows what... drive-ins brought. Drive-ins just seem like, I see a lot of people saying, like, oh, took the family to the drive-in. Like, there's a few drive-ins here in Southern California still, maybe one, that people will take the whole family to because it's cheap and you got a couple screens, you can have make a night of it. But it's like, I always thought drive-ins, you know, I mean, the only time I was at a drive-in, I wasn't watching the movie. And I feel like that's always been the case. And I feel like in the 70s, maybe it was even more so. I mean, this was like equivalent to going up, driving up to Makeout Hill back in like the 50s, the 60s, you know? The drive-ins were just cesspools of screwing.
Cesspool.
Not a family
experience. I think people will dig it if you like exploitation flicks.
Yeah.
It does come recommended. It's just, it is a little out there. It's weird. Just put it that way. It's a weird slasher. So, but anyways, what do we got next here?
As a history of slashers, it's pretty great to kind of see a Halloween slasher film, because once Halloween hit, everyone started copying that formula. But like, it looks pretty great. Like the beginning, I tweeted out, I said that I feel like I need some Gooby Gone and a putty knife to scrape the grime off the screen. But after the beginning, I think with most film, the worst part of the most, the dirtiest part, the most broken down part of the film was always the beginning, because I was always closer to oxidation and things like that. But as you got to the more to the middle, like, films start looking better. But no, this looked pretty good. It started off really, really, really grimy, and then it just kind of, then it felt, you know, a little grimy, but not as much. But yeah, I would definitely recommend giving this a watch if you're able to, and check it out. They have some great special
content
here. And
buy it. Surprise, you know, support Severin. Yeah, that's another thing, is they don't do any shoddy releases with special features. They always try to pack it full, and they still maintain their price to be under $29.99.
Oh, wait, what?
Just saying. And they're doing, the best transfers they could possibly do.
Yeah, this is restored,
and,
totally.
Yeah, this one is restored from the original camera negative. Huh, yeah. Not an HD master. Huh. Wow. Neat. All right. I'm sorry if anybody knows what we're doing. We're just being dicks. It's fine. It's what we do. All right. So moving along.
Moving along. Let's.
What do you want to talk about next?
Let's get this one out of the way. Let's talk about The Survivor.
James Herbert's frightening novel of supernatural power is now a movie.
After all, I've just killed 300 people in a field and walked away without a scratch. That makes me pretty special, doesn't it?
The pilot is haunted by the guilt of his survival.
It'll come. It has to, Harry. I think I'm going mad.
The psychic is tormented by visions of the horrors yet to come.
They're asking for your help.
Who's asking for help?
The men, women, and children who died in your aircraft.
300 murdered souls combine their psychic energy to hunt down their killer and destroy those who profit from their death.
Oh, oof. All right. So out of all the films, I think Sean and I are on the same page on this is a film that we're going to have a lot of – this is going to be hard to talk about. Because I feel that this movie is underseen, for sure. But it is, Aussie horror film. Is it a horror film? I don't know.
Supernatural. It's a supernatural film.
It's
basically there's a 747 crash. Pretty much everyone dies except for the pilot and
Unbreakable.
Well, you know what? I have a feeling M. Night Shyamalan saw this and took a few things. And I'm not going to spoil anything else. Anyway, so he emerges unscathed, but he seems to be haunted by the spirits of the other dead passengers, especially some of the children that were involved in the crash. It's a slow burn. It's more of a psychological thriller in that sense. But there are a few pretty great cinematography shots in it that I really appreciated. But as a whole, I felt this thing was a slog. And
I think
Bede Germain actually wants to check this out, and we may be hearing from him on it. I really want to see his take on this.
It's, you know, whenever you this is also written by, the novel is written by James Herbert. You may know that name pop up. He has like a quadrilogy of books. We talked about on episodes ago. We talked about Deadly Eyes, on the show. And Deadly Eyes is based off a Herbert novel called Rats. And then he made sequels called, Domain, I think, Lair and, In the City or The City, something like that. So, James Herbert has kind of a unique way of telling stories. And I feel that because I actually have read this novel. I own pretty much a lot of James Herbert. I love the rat stuff he does. But I feel that they took a lot of directly from the novel and applied it too much into this film. Hence why it's so fucking slow. Like, it's not the film is like, I don't consider it boring. I'm bored, yes, but I just think its pacing is completely off.
It's an hour and a half, like, and it feels like 6 hours. It
just
felt so long.
Like, here's the thing is that there are a few, there's certain things about the film that work. You know, the cinematography and things like that. It does have kind of this sense of dread that the film provides through the cinematography, but it just never, like, it doesn't feel like it goes anywhere with it. It doesn't keep up the momentum. It's very talky, but the talks aren't very, like, interesting either. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where I think it has, like, a good idea in the back there, but just never achieves it. So.
Yes, the director is David Hemmings. He directed Just a Gigolo before this. Brad?
I have no idea what that is.
Neither do I. I don't know. I started watching an interview, and I can't remember who was interviewed. I think it was David Hemmings that was interviewed. He said that this was like a follow-up film to a film that did really well, and they needed to do something really quick, so they decided to adapt, you know, this James Herbert novel. So,
yeah, there's some, you know, older interviews on there, but they actually talk about James Herbert a lot on the special features on this disc. So, you know, there's that. And plus, I guess they took interviews from Not Quite Hollywood, mm-hmm. which was a very popular,
it's fantastic documentary.
Yeah, doc. And they have, I guess, the interviews from there too. So, but I have no idea what Just a Gigolo is. So,
and I'm just trying to find out, like, what the movie they were talking about that happened before that. And it, for David Hemmings, that's the movie that was...
He was an actor, though, right?
No, yeah, totally.
Was he an actor?
Oh, yeah. He's been in a shit ton of TV, and he was in Barbarella. Gosh, I mean, he was in Deep Red. So, you know, he's no slouch.
I think he was, like, in, like, newer films, too. Like, he wasn't...
Yeah.
Like, in just... he just wasn't
in New York.
Yeah, I'm about to say, like, I remember the name, and I know what he looks like. He's in some popular films.
He's
yeah.
Gladiator.
I mean, he doesn't have, like, lead roles, but he's a well-known actor. I mean, he's, you know what the dude looks like.
Yeah.
He's not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see David Hemmings, you're like, oh, shit, that's the guy. Like, you're going to know who he is. But, yeah, he directed a few movies, and this is one of them. But, I mean, I tell you what, as far as, like, an actor, you know, turning director and then still acting and stuff like that, I mean, he doesn't do a terrible job.
Well,
it's
well
just, I think,
it's well done.
Yeah, it's a well-done movie. It just doesn't really keep you, like, to me, it just doesn't keep me on my toes. It just... It feels like it just drags a lot.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Yeah. The opening crash, though, is pretty epic.
Yeah. No, it does have some great things going for it. It just doesn't keep up. Was this a Code Red DVD release?
I don't know.
I'm just curious. I was just curious to see if Bill Olson would have said anything about it.
Oh.
So,
Are we gonna?
If I remember correctly, that was the DVD that I had. Because I think I have this on DVD somewhere, but maybe I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Soul Survivor. Never mind. I'm thinking of Soul Survivor. But anyways,
right on. All right, let's keep the train moving. Let's get into a couple of the. What were deemed nunsploitation. And these came out, I think these came out like the week of Easter, which was great. Great timing for these ones.
That's on purpose.
I know it's on purpose. Of course.
No, I'm just saying it's just Severin being sneaky.
The first one let's talk about is a 1981 Bruno Mattei film called The Other Hell.
The fruit of sin and obscenity.
Or Altro Inferno.
You should do voiceover for the like Grindhouse Fox trailers,
also known as Guardian of Hell.
Wow, that's so good, Sean. Keep it up.
I am available for any voiceover work. If you're listening and need to hire someone, I will do it for you. I actually used to do voiceover work for on hold messages. Whenever they needed, they needed a special voice, they brought me into the
You'd make me hang up.
Probably. All right. The Other Hell is 1981 Bruno Mattei flick about a convent, and a priest investigates some possible paranormal activity or strangeness that could be going on at this convent, where shit is going down, but is it supernatural or not?
Where did the fuck did you read that
I
from?
I made that up as I went.
Oh.
This one, I had some high hopes. You know, I mean, nunsploitation. I mean, there's many kinds of nunsploitation. Most of the time with involving nuns being naughty.
Oh my God.
And getting naked. So,
this is the part where I get frustrated, where you explain a movie.
No, I'm done.
This happens at least. This happens quite a bit.
You know, I kind of
people listen to the show. People like wait
just
for
to
it.
Rally you up.
I know people wait for it. I think even Rob Hunter said something the other time. He was like, "This is the part where Brad gets mad at Sean for like explaining a movie." I mean,
all right up till now. I think I've done okay.
I know you've done okay, but right now it's just really bad. So I think first we need to talk about nunsploitation.
Yes.
Which, you know, there are quite a few nunsploitation films, but a lot of them are hard to find. And I think that's obviously due to the fact of, you know, a lot of these were European films and, you know, films from Italy and across the seas. They weren't really churning out American nunsploitation films, mainly because I think, and also they weren't distributed well over here just because of the fact that, you know, hey, this is kind of sacrilegious and fucked up. So we don't have a ton of nunsploitation films from the U.S. They're mostly all from Europe and so forth. So, it kind of kickstarted. I think it really hit big with Ken Russell's The Devils. Because it took nuns in a way that are, figures of authority and teachings. And giving their life to God and for God and things like that. So when we have the devils and it's very hypersexual, I think that kind of caught everybody off guard, saying, holy shit, like this is really fucked up. And of course, you know, I just was saying about the, you know, American films, and then Ken Russell makes The Devils over here. They kind of kickstarted everything, and then we just didn't see any more from America for a while. But I think that's because The Devils did it. And it's like, no one can follow that up at this point. we're going to have a bunch of knockoffs from Europe and Italy, but can anybody top the Russells or Ken Russell's The Devils? Nope. I sit and watch The Devils, and I'm like, why does anybody even make movies? Like, why does anybody even try if they can't accomplish what Ken Russell can do? but anyways, Franco made some made a nunsploitation film. Of course, we have Mattei's, The Other Hell. D'Amato made one or two, probably. I can only think of one off the top of my head. And you know, we actually still have nunsploitation today. They're just not as popular. We had, Richard Griffin did none of that. Late 2000s. And there is a one that is a lot of fun that Mike Sandlin actually recommended to me. Mike, you and I agree on something called Nude Nuns with Big Guns. That I found very, very amusing. So, but anyways, nunsploitation wasn't super popular, anymore. It was very, very, very popular in the 70s. A couple films here in the 80s and a couple in the 90s, and we get a couple here or there now. So this hit the time. This was 1980, but it was still coming off the 70s. So it was during that. It was fading out, very, very quickly. So Matei, of course, had to get his 2 cents in as the ripoff fucking king.
Of course.
Bruno Matei, I don't know if Matei's ever made an original movie. Because
the score is basically repurposed Goblin.
No, it's from fucking Rats.
Yeah.
The score is from Rats. Matei, obviously, I don't know if he's ever made anything original to my knowledge. Everything's a rip on something. The other Hell is just a rip off of, characters from Baruti's, Killer Nun, which is available on Blue Underground Blu-ray. Directors confused here. Not D'Amato. Who am I trying to think of? Franco's, The Demons that he made. It's just a bunch of shit, but at least out of everything that Matei's done, this is one of the more original pieces that he did, just as far as kind of like the storyline goes. But I mean, we are having nuns being possessed, maybe by the devil? ? I wouldn't consider this one kind of sexual. It's just it's blasphemy in a way. Would you consider this really sexual? Because I'm so desensitized at this point.
Not necessarily sexual. There is some sexual violence as far as people being stabbed in certain areas. And there's like a there's like in the basement we don't know why, but there are bodies basically being carved up. And at one point, one of the bodies, whoever this is, starts stabbing and, the groin of one of the
bodies. It's brutal in a way, at times,
but not sexual as far as would be something in The Devils or anything like that. But, there's a whole lot of stuff just wrapped into this film to make it interesting. Does it work as a whole? I don't know. Have you seen a Bruno Matei film before? If you have, you'll know what you're going to expect, and Bruno Matei's, his zombies, do show up, with the kind of zombies that he always seems to end up with in the films. But, this just, once I knew it was a Bruno Matei film, and it was written by Claudio Fragrasso, who wrote Rats and Troll 2, instantly recognized the score. I knew the score was repurposed Goblin from the get-go. I was like, this is, so if you're aware of all that, sit back and relax and enjoy this little Matei joint,
Matei joint.
Hey, there's enough here, I think, to enjoy. It wasn't my favorite of these nunsploitation films, but it was enjoyable. I liked this this young priest who thought he was all technologically advanced. He's like, we have science and philosophy and technology on our side, and his technology is basically a tape recorder with a microphone.
God. Well, I mean, yeah. This, if but here's the thing: is if you like, you know, because I wasn't even paying attention to the writer. For Grasso actually directed, I believe with his wife, Troll 2. And if you know the story behind kind of Troll 2 of it being made, is that they don't speak any English at all. So when they were on set directing, it was basically somebody trying to interpret them what they were saying in making this movie. But if you like films, because the thing is like, even though it's batshit crazy and Matei rips people off, I mean, we like films like, you know, Matei did, or for Grasso and Matei have worked together as far as like making, Beyond the Darkness, Hell of the Living Dead, you know, Rats, which I find fucking entertaining as shit. Like, I love Rats so much. He was still doing films, like, even today. I think these dudes are still, Matei's not alive, right? Matei's dead. I think Fragasso's still alive.
Yeah.
But, and the thing is, it's kind of hard to track down some of their work because their names aren't on the films. They were making up names. Like on this one, it's Stefan Oblowski and, Fragasso worked under the pseudonym of, Clyde something. I can't remember the name. But even in like Troll 2, it's like it says, but it like it looks like an American name, but it's actually fucking Italians that made Troll 2.
Yeah.
It's just kind of hard to. And now it's easier because we have IMDb and the internet. But at the time, like no one knew that this Matei dude was pretty much the same guy making all these movies because they worked under, you know, so many different pseudonyms or went uncredited or, you know, like I said, just, you know, they changed their name. And I think it's just due to the fact of like marketing wise, people were paying attention. There was like, oh, I can't pronounce that. It seems foreign. So let's slap an American name on it.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody's ever written anything about why that was so popular of the real reasons why, because there's had to been like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, let's just slap an American name on it because people aren't going to want to watch a foreign film.
No, it's got to be more to that. But it's probably had to be more with foreign distribution for sure. But one last thing I wanted to talk about before we move on was the actress Franca Stoppi. She was like the main nun, mother of Vincenza, and she's pretty fantastic. She's been in a lot of films. She's been in Beyond the Darkness. She's been in Caged Women. And I like her face and her eyes are so expressive. Like you would recognize her in other things. But I just thought she was great. And because when she's in this nun outfit, right, all she really has is her face and the, just the way she uses that small real estate of acting, you know, all she had available was her face. And she does just a fantastic, memorable job, like especially her eyes. You know, she's got these piercing eyes and she does seem that she possibly could be a psychopath.
You're a psychopath.
Thank you. But no, I thought she was really
great. So this is another 35mm. Now it's uncut and uncensored in HD, which they consider for the first time. And apparently they discovered this print too, which was super cool. It has reversible artwork. Honestly, I like the artwork that it comes with. I don't like the reverse artwork. Just a little tidbit from Brad.
I think all of
these have reversible artwork, right? The Survivor doesn't.
Survivor does not.
Drive-In Massacre does, right?
Survivor was not.
Drive-In Massacre does.
Worthy.
So, but yeah, definitely check it out. If you're a fan of these Italian batshit crazy cinema, then give this one a shot.
So. You're a fan of Matei for sure, and these crazy Italian films, like this is right up your alley, like hands down. If you're on the fence, I would say depending on the price point, give it a shot. But yeah, man, if you're a fan of these, any of these Italian films, if you collect Italian films, like, this is totally it. Moving along to film, more of a modern film, and another what could be nunsploitation. I said when I got done watching this that this was Lovecraftian nunsploitation. It's a film called Dark Waters.
For those who are blind shall see the true face of the beast and forever suffer it in their soul.
This is straight up, has all the elements, if you're, you know, familiar with anything Lovecraftian, very, very much inspired by Lovecraft. It's by the sea. There could be a Cthulhu-like creature involved. They definitely have, like, a big old amulet thing that has a monster face on it. And there's a nearby sea town that, you know, maybe has some secrets. A woman...
Lovecraft.
What?
I just yelled at Lovecraft.
Lovecraft.
He always has fucking towns that are by the sea.
Yeah. A woman basically inherits everything from her father once her father dies. So one of them happened to be... She found out that he was giving a lot of money to a convent out in the middle of nowhere by this little sea town. So she... being curious where all this money has been going, decides to make a trip to visit this convent and see what's going on and see what her father's money has done and kind of let them know that she's taking over his estate. Little does she know that there's possibly some sacrifice going on to this possible water creature and shit gets real. This is where I'm awful at giving the decisions.
Well, yeah, you're really bad at this. So, Dark Waters, let's back up for a second. This is why I really... whatever, Sean.
Back it up.
Let's mark that this nunsploitation film, which, I mean, I look at it maybe... I mean, it has nuns in it.
right.
But I don't know. It's something different about this film. Like, it has nunsploitation ideas and everything, but it's something else.
Yeah.
It really is. And we need to mark that this film isn't made in the 70s. It's not made in the 80s.
Right.
It's made in 1993, 94 it came out. So this is a 90s horror film. And the one thing that I've said over and over and over again is the 90s get shat on so much for horror. And I consider that just a ridiculous statement. You know, this film came out in the 90s and... like, it feels 90s, but it also has certain elements.
I didn't feel necessarily 90s at all.
Well, I think that's – and here's the reason why you might feel that way and how I feel about it is that it uses so many things from, like, ideology, mm-hmm. Cinematography. The pacing is very much – like a Mario Bava film, same thing that Argento did in Argento's prime, you know, cause Argento was a really fucking great filmmaker, for a tiny bit of his life. I mean, I still love Argento's work even into the 80s and 90s, but there was a time when Argento had this craft that was just killing.
Yeah.
In the world of cinema, and you know, the same thing with Bava, just giving a kind of a tone of the film, and as soon as the film starts, like, you just feel like something's wrong.
Well, that's,
you don't know any character
that the shot
right.
of the crosses on this cliff, you know, like, it's an amazing shot. Like, I had to pause it and just look at it for a while, and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
and it's haunting all at the same time. It's really great.
Like, I mean, this is this is kind of a more art housey film. Yeah. Like there's a lot of elements. Like it has great cinematography, but there's also kind of some like art house stuff behind it. Because I mean, we have like, you know, films like, you know, The Thing and Halloween by, you know, that are, you know, lensed by, you know, Cundy and, you know, all these other cinematographers that have done great things in their careers. They know how to set up a shot, but like, this is almost like paintings,
mm-hmm.
you know,
oh, yeah.
when we're watching certain things on screen, and like, it feels like they're, you know, like a Kubrick film where Kubrick wasn't just about, you know, what's going to be lensed and what's going to look good. You could, like, when I say that, you could freeze frame portions of Kubrick's work and portions of Dark Waters and then blow them up on a picture and it be a work of art. Yeah. That's something a little bit different than just something that has a great tracking shot or just can fit everything in frame or what looks good in frame. Like these Dark Waters looks like, holy shit, like almost every fucking frame you could pause and it be a painting. And what's weird is that I was watching it, and this is actually a new one for me. I've seen the other Hell before, Drive-In Massacre, The Survivor, and all the other films we're going to pretty much talk about. But Dark Waters is something that escaped me. I actually didn't know anything about the film at all, even when Severin announced it. I was like, what the fuck is Dark Waters? So I've never even heard of this movie. So I'm like, when I'm watching it, or after I watch it, I look up the director. Nothing else. Apparently he has a movie coming out soon, but he has nothing else. The cinematographer, nothing.
Yeah, the cinematographer's done a bunch of first assistant work since then, like camera operator, first assistant.
Right. But as far as like, you know, just being a cinematographer, I'm like, wait a second. Why is this happening?
I know.
Like, it kind of blows my mind that you have, but again, I guess that's of being underseen. And I'm not going to like say, oh, my name's Brad. I, you know, if I haven't heard of it, I, you know, probably must not be good. No, but I haven't fucking heard of this movie.
Most
and
people feel like haven't.
And I live in the fucking horror section of the video stores. And I just didn't go to one video store. I went to multiple because I moved around a lot and went on vacations and went to video stores around there. I don't ever remember seeing or hearing about this movie or even seeing any of the hardcore horror fans on Twitter, you know, film Twitter talk about this. So I really think this movie is lost in a way. I think it came out at a time that no one cared. Honestly, like it was out of, you know, it was by a nobody. It came out at a really odd time in the 90s when, you know what I feel like this movie is like? I feel that this goes like almost in sync with like a film like Paper House.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it has that tone. If you need a time period to put Dark Waters, take the time frame that Paper House came out. And I think that's like the perfect, like, not a perfect pair to like double, you know, feature this, but it has that feel.
Do you want to hear what other films other horror films came out in 1993? Just real quick. Needful Things.
Yeah.
Kronos. Body Snatchers. Body Bags. Ticks. Leprechaun. I'm trying to see. This was all, I mean, Fire in the Sky came out. There's a lot of really good horror flicks that came out.
But a lot of these are well shot, you know.
Jurassic Park came out in 93.
Ugh. We're not talking about Jurassic Park.
No, I'm trying to see, like, what would have, you know, kept people from seeing this. But I don't know, like, a lot, like, 93.
Did it go to theaters?
I don't know, but 93 had a lot of really great, I don't know if they were direct-to-video or not. But some really – I feel like it's almost like the last hurrah of really great horror films before they got all CGI'd up. Like this is practical effects. It's really great cinematography. This was the last year – of totally 100% physical effects. You know, because you had Carnosaur, Body Melt. And then I guarantee you once Jurassic Park hit, everyone was like, oh, we need to throw the CGI in. And they started throwing all the bullshit CGI. And then you get, in 2001, films like Dagon, which is an amazing film, but shit CGI. But this made me think of Dagon a lot, because it's because of the Lovecraftian element.
fish people.
Fish people. Dagon has an amazing.
This doesn't have not fish people.
Rip. No. Not technically.
Wait, was that a pun?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, but not to give anything away, but yeah, there's definitely some creatures and weird shit in this movie.
It's great. And like I said, this thing has atmosphere in spades. We got nuns carrying burning crosses. You have an old blind nun that basically whispers in a foreign language and is interpreted by another nun. You have dead fish all over the beach. There's some intense stabbing that always makes me like cringe. You know, because sometimes movies you have someone where they stab, but when there's like this just downward stabbing, you know, just like just violent.
Jesus Christ.
Holy shit.
You sound like you're jerking it.
There's a lot, I think, to love in this film. I think this thing needs to be talked about more and discovered just because it is a work of art. And Mariano Biano, the director and writer, like, he's only done short films since then. I think the new film coming out is a short film. Like, this guy needs he needs more work if he's gonna be
a bunch of his short films, or they included a bunch of his short films on this release.
Yeah, like,
so I'm excited to
special features on this thing.
Yeah, I'm getting excited to actually dive into this, because I'm like, man, why is this guy not like – because, you know, the thing is we say Argento, Carpenter, you know, Bava, Fulci. We need to be saying Biano at the same time. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I feel that we need to be talking about this guy as much as we talk about other films, but you can't talk about somebody if they've only done one feature their entire life. This is his only feature, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if he's like Troy Duffy, where he's like, wants to make a movie, he makes Boondock Saints, and then he's like, oh, I don't need to make anything else. I'm the best filmmaker in the world.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think this is the case of just unfortunately getting lost in the mix and people just not being able to see this. Because all those other films I mentioned in 93, I remember distinctly seeing on video shelves, browsing the video store. I do not recognize Dark Waters. I feel like it just got lost. A really good film got lost in the mix, and which is,
you know what? Something else this reminds me of? Possession.
Yeah. Who's the actress in this that plays the main character? Because she reminded me a lot of that actress in Possession, but I know it's not her.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, she does. It's I can't remember the name. I could also look at the back. Apparently,
name Elizabeth.
Louise Salter.
Is that her? I don't know for sure if that's her or not.
Yeah, I think that's the one that inherits the place.
Okay. Well, she's great. And like
Elizabeth, right? That's her name? Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
If we're wrong, everyone will never tell you.
No, because no one's seen this movie.
Watch the film and figure it out yourself. But yeah,
Louise Salter is Elizabeth.
She's great.
Hey, also, listeners, if you have seen this movie prior to this, and don't be all cocky and say, yeah, I know about it. Like, if you have actually legitimately seen it and, you know, have watched it numerous times, let us know. Because I'm kind of curious of, are there any, like, hardcore fans? Because pretty much going through film Twitter and just, like, actually researching Dark Waters, no one's fucking talking about it, like, prior to this release. So, kind of curious. And also, bravo to Severin for pulling out something that they knew about, obviously, and giving it to the world.
Yeah. Out of all the films I watched for this, like, this one, Head and Shoulders, was, like, I think my favorite. Just, I've been thinking about this ever since I've seen it. It doesn't happen to be
very often. It comes close to Dreamstalker.
Yeah, Dreamstalker.
I don't know, man.
Dreamstalker is a lot of fun, but but as a film but mainly like all the things that I like appreciate about films and what kind of pushes my buttons and like that I love, like, this has amazing cinematography, this has
really great acting. The story gets twisted and bizarre. You know, the Cthulhu element, the Lovecraft element, the religious horror element, like, this pushes all my sweet spots, and I love it. So I think they released this on DVD before, I guess. Did they before? I mean, this says that there was a DVD, or did they release a DVD and Blu-ray at the same time?
But I don't know.
At any rate,
now I feel even dumber if they've released this and I didn't see it.
At any rate, this is a film that deserves to be seen. If you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. Highly recommend you buy it just because of the wealth of special features along with it, and just a stunning film and a really great release from Severin. So it gets the highest, the highest praise from me. Let's move along. We are running out of time.
It was released on DVD by No Shame.
Huh. Okay.
So No Shame was pretty well known for us, like, crazy horror people. But yeah, I'd never even saw this. 10 years ago, it was released.
Wow. All right, we have a couple more releases to get to. Let's quickly, Brad, get through. Let's talk about Kathy's Curse, because I feel like there's going to be a lot to talk about with Dreamstalker and stuff. But let's talk about this film that a lot of people, when this came out, like, Twitter went ridiculous. Film Twitter went nuts when they all started watching Kathy's Curse. This film came out in 1976. And like I said, it's called Kathy's Curse.
Meet the Gimbal's daughter, Kathy. See through Kathy's eyes. Just when you thought horror films reached an intensely shocking peak of terror, here is Kathy's Curse.
She's gone, Kathy.
I'm
gone,
Kathy!
Well, it's perfectly natural. You've been burnt in a fire. Just wait a minute, and I'll make it stop hurting.
What do you do when unexpected horror erupts all around you? Kathy's Curse. Kathy just wants to play with you, but please, don't take her dolly.
So, Kathy's Curse could be maybe mistaken for an Exorcist ripoff. I don't think it is. I think it's a lot. It's a lot different. You know, it does involve a possibly possessed child, but the opening of the film is a father and daughter. He grabs the daughter, puts her in the car, and they're driving away.
Oh, nope. Before he says that, he goes, "Your mother is a bitch."
No, I was getting to that after saying specifically, "Your mother's a bitch." He grabs her and they leave. A car accident happens because they try to miss a fake bunny.
Right, but there's no, like, exposition of why he's actually saying your mother is a bitch.
I know, and like, I don't think there ever is, but that's the catalyst to starting this whole thing. And basically, we jump forward the next, you know, in 20 years later or whatever, a new family who's related to the father. This father moves in the house with their little girl, and basically, we're led to believe that possibly there's a demon in the house or a spirit that could possibly inhabit the young girl and harm the family.
But here's the thing is that I said possess, that about possess. Your women, your mother is a bitch. But as Kathy says, all women are bitches. So the little girl likes to say bitch a lot in this movie.
Yeah, this is a bizarre film. I did have a lot of fun watching it. I think this is one of the funner releases in this last batch here. You're going to have a lot of fun checking this out. Brad, what is your reaction to Kathy's Curse?
I have seen Kathy's Curse before. This wasn't anything new to me. I remember seeing this years and years and years ago, and it always was just kind of there. Like, it does have some goofy moments. You know, the dialogue is pretty funny. But it was just always just a movie that was just there. Like, it didn't see... Here's the thing. I don't understand why people are going so crazy over it. It feels like there are some crazy moments, but for the most part, it's pretty tame. Like, and
yeah, someone was comparing this to Troll 2 online, and I had to stop them and go, whoa.
No, I mean, whoa. You're talking about something.
This is nowhere near the batshit craziness of Troll 2.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's a weird and strange movie for sure, but there's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things where, I'm not gonna get into it. Anyways, it's just, well, because I'm just gonna come across as a dick.
What? But what, Brad come across as a dick? When has that ever happened?
Yeah. But anyways, it's got special features, and you know, I know Brian Collins was super excited about this because he's been talking about this movie ever since I started following him on Twitter.
He's responsible for this release. We can blame it all on him. Somebody in a review also blamed, like, basically put it all on him.
Yeah. So, I mean, which is cool. He's loved this movie for quite some time. Yeah, I hope people enjoy it. It's just, don't make this like The Room or something like that, because it's not. It's a fun little movie, but it's not that great.
The best part of the film, I think, is when she, like, for some reason, their old man, like the caretaker, she basically lets him just drink himself silly, and it just gets bizarre and awkward. And then there's the scene in near the beginning where the wife has some people over. They're new in the neighborhood, and one of the women says that she's like a medium, like a psychic, and she's like, "Well, do you want to see what I can do?" And she starts doing, like, "I can read things in the house and tell you what happened." So she starts doing it, and then Kathy starts acting crazy, and she has like a pin or something, and she's walking towards another girl and could possibly push this stabby thing into this little girl's eyes. But it's like this whole crazy batshit scene happens where another child is harmed by Kathy, and then she just goes, "Well, I just better get going." She just leaves, and then she appears numerous times in the film, and it's like they don't address the crazy situation that happened. Like, if that happened to us, like, and it happened to my wife, like, she'd be like, "You're never coming around again. Fuck you. Get out of here. You're crazy. You're not invited to my house." But this woman just comes on over like nothing happened. It's ridiculous. You don't share my enthusiasm. That's okay, Brad.
But I honestly have nothing else to say about Kathy's Curse.
Okay, fine. Fine. All right. Let's move on to the last.
Watch it with a group. That's what I can say. No, watch Kathy's Curse with a group. So, all right.
All right. Finally, let's move on to the Intervision release. This is a DVD with shot on video films, directed by who's the director? Where the hell did it go?
Oh, Dreamstalker is directed by, what was the name? I can't even remember now. I know Alan Grant was the director of...
Alan Grant did Death by Love.
Death by Love. Oh, Chris, is it Chris something?
Well, I don't know. On Chris, the back of the on the back of the disc, the director of Dreamstalker is not listed.
Chris Mills, I think. Chris Mills? Christopher Mills? I believe that's it.
All right.
If I remember correctly.
Oh, Dreamstalker, not Deathstalker. I was thinking, you know, we're not talking Deathstalker, which is pretty fantastic. Dreamstalker.
No.
I'm trying to find the director. Christopher Mills. Yes. It's not listed on the back. Severin. The director of Dreamstalker is not listed on the back of the case. Just throwing that out there. Let's talk about 1991's Dreamstalker.
Mm.
All I'm going to say is this has my favorite use of somebody jumping or falling out of a window. This could be my top ever scene of someone falling out a window. It is glorious.
Mm.
Do you concur?
I don't know. What was that? What was, shit, we watched something else where a dummy fell out of a window. Absolutely ridiculous.
Oh God. What was that?
I can't remember
now. I think it was one of the, a Severin film, I think. Was it?
Yeah. I can't remember. Shit. What was, oh, Dr. Butcher MD.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dummy just like explodes.
Falls off.
But I think we should start with Death by Love first.
Oh, dude, you're getting me all backed up here. I just totally, for editing purposes, introduced a Dreamstalker.
I know. You don't have to edit anything. You just keep Dreamstalker.
All right, fine.
But I'm just saying Death by Love because you haven't seen Death by Love.
I was unable to, out of the, all the films, I was unable to get to Death by Love.
And
so.
You saved the best for last. Dreamstalker. Okay. So Death by Love is on the same DVD as Dreamstalker. Both of these films are shot on video, so don't expect, like, if you say, oh, they're not on Blu-ray, I don't want it. they're shot on video, so nothing's going to look different. Death by Love is a really weird movie, and it's so good. So it's written, directed, and stars this guy, Alan Grant, in this film where he meets women. He's a sculptor. He meets women and then he just bangs them. And we're not talking about like, you know, we hear about off-screen banging. We don't get to see like 30 seconds of like laying a woman down, you know, undressing her top, and then they wake up, or like the next scene, they're just in bed smoking. Or laying each other's arms. We're talking about, we have like 5 to 7 minute bang sessions in this movie. We have him hitting up a girl he just met that he's banging down and sucking on her boobies. We have him getting down and dirty with an older lady. And when I say older lady, I mean older lady.
The director is the star.
Yeah, I know. This movie was... He made this movie in order to, like, you know, try to get some pussy here.
This is now.
So he is just going down and he is just trying to bang. I mean, there's like 4 sex scenes in this movie. And I, first off, have to say kudos to, Severin and Intervision, we'll say, because that's who is on the label in this. But Intervision, kudos to the subtitles, mainly because both of these films have very bad audio to begin with. So it's kind of hard to decipher what they're actually saying. But Intervision is having a lot of fun with the subtitles because their description of music is hilarious. And also they introduced me to punch slap because one of the actors gets hit and then in parentheses it says punch slapping. And I was like, that's perfect because it sounds like a punch, but the ending is the slap. So there's a lot of sex in this film. And basically what it is that whoever this actor, Alan Grant, meets, his name is, I can't think of his name right now.
Now I want to, there's a Skype interview on the DVD with him.
Oh, he's just talking about how he wants to bang chicks. So, Alan Grant, I believe his name's Joel. In the film. So Joel is a sculptor and he meets these women and he bangs them down. And then sooner or later, they end up dead.
What?
And what it is that they are after a known, or what they consider a serial killer who worships Satan, who had a run-in with Joel years ago. And now Joel's female friends are being hunted down by this serial killer. But
I will not give away this movie.
But on the back of this DVD, it says, filmed in the suburbs of Dallas and packed with softcore sex, scattershot performances, thick regional accents, and a WTF plot twist. That's on the back of this Intervision DVD. And I will tell you what. The plot twist of this movie is insane.
God, now I'm kicking myself for not watching this.
I was watching the movie.
I totally passed. I was like up too late. I tried to all-nighter, and it just did not work.
I was watching the film, and I'm like, okay, this is fun. You know, here we go. It's sexy time, some murders. And then the plot twist happens, and I was like, is this genius? I don't understand. Like, this would be one of these, like, if this was an indie film and played to the indie crowd of today, people would lose their goddamn minds. But no one's going to lose their minds on this one because no one's going to watch it. So, anyways, because it's like, oh, a second film? Oh, this must be the shitty one. I tell you, Death by Love is insane. It's so good. The performances are ridiculous. I love how they say thick regional accents because they're just making fun of it because there's some characters in this film. You can't, like, you need the subtitles. Even though it's clear as day, you can hear them. You just don't understand what the fuck they're saying. Just because they're really churning out the accents in the film. So anyways, watch Death by Love. It's insane. It takes a while to get started, but man, the payoff is 100% totally worth it.
And it's only 74 minutes.
And I tell you what, man, at the end of the film, I was like yelling at my television. I was, because I saw what was happening, and like when the plot twist happens, I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. I was like, no, oh my god, no, no, no. And I'm like, wait a second, why am I like fucking like cheering in a fucking shot on video movie? Like, that was just so goofy to begin with. And I'm like, I was actually getting legitimately fucking upset and angry and on the edge of my seat in this movie. So anyways, yeah, Death by Love's great. So now on to the best.
Circle the wagon back around. Actually, sorry, circle the motorcycles around.
Dirt bikes.
Dirt bikes. And don't fall off.
We have Dream Stalker. I was trying to support you on that one, but I couldn't think.
That's fine.
But
I will Dad tell Joke you, City apparently right now.
Is that we have Dream Stalker to talk about, which is, I just said Death by Love is insane. This movie's batshit fucking crazy. And one of the more incoherent movies I've recently seen. So we have, we're not going to call this guy Ricky. We're going to call him Dead Ricky. So Dead Ricky
But Ricky's hair is just glorious.
Dead so, Ricky.
Okay.
We only call him Dead Ricky.
When they dress fancy, go out to dinner, Ricky's hair is just like a soft piece of comfort. I just want to rub my face in.
But when they go out to dinner, he's still Dead Ricky. Huh? This movie,
okay.
It's hard to actually explain what the director was actually trying to do in this movie, because I have never seen a movie where we wake up from so many fucking dreams and it's hard to tell. Like, I can't even tell you what really happened, like what happens for real in the movie.
I have no idea.
Like, I think everything is a dream. I don't understand what is real. So we have, Dead Ricky is a dirt bike, connoisseur who's in a race and, gets, engaged into, our, lead, Brittany here. And he gives her the creepiest gift I have ever seen. It is a clown jester
what did he call those? Music box?
I guess.
So it
not
plays
something
this
you
weird...
definitely speaks yeah. about romance. It's not a romantic gift.
So he's racing his dirt bikes. They're getting engaged, and then boom! It's not real. It's all a dream. And then she is informed about Ricky's death. And at least 15 minutes in the film, when her friend comes to tell her about Ricky's death, about how he died, the credits roll, like the beginning credits. Like, I was like, wait a second, we didn't have, like, we had credits already, didn't we? But then it, like, she's like sobbing on the steps and the credits start to roll while she sobs. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. So she visits the grave of dead Ricky. And then Ted Ricky tries to kill her with his dirt bike coming out of nowhere. But you don't have to worry because it's all a dream. And then, you know, we wake up again, and now she is with I love how they talk about Dr. Frisk. And they, like, keep joking about his name. Like, I'm not going to go see a doctor named Dr. Frisk. They're in basically somebody's living room that's supposed to be a, you know, a psychiatric office. And she tells him about, you know, dead Ricky and, you know, about her friends and all this other stuff. And then we have the sex scene. Dead Ricky comes in to her room and we have a rape. Question mark scene
hey,
that happens,
but he puts a condom on.
he like
one handed.
He lays on top of her, and he's like, "Oh no, don't worry, I brought a condom." And then like he what? Puts it on one handed, and then he does one thrust, and he goes, "It broke." Oh no! And it's like what? And then we wake up, and we don't have to worry because it's all a dream.
Oh yeah, right. It's all a dream.
So it's like it keeps happening, and I'm like, wait, when is the movie going to start? Like, did this stuff really happen? So, I mean, we're a half hour into the movie, and we've had three dream sequences already.
I feel like we had more than that.
You don't have to worry because the rest of the film is filled with dream sequences. And so anyways, Dead Ricky shows up, and then she goes on this retreat thing, I guess, whatever it's called. So she goes away, and immediately she meets somebody that she knew in her past.
Yeah.
In the bathroom.
Yeah.
This guy waltzes into her house. She is like getting dried off with a towel. She sees this strange man and is like, "Oh, how'd you get in here?" He's like, "Oh, the door was unlocked."
It's not creepy.
And he's
at all.
Like, and then they have this exchange about like, "Hey, I knew you. Oh yeah, I knew you too. You want to go in the kitchen and I'll make lunch?" What? This guy is just in your house, and basically within 2 minutes, they're face fucking each other with their tongues.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this woman moves too quick. This is the reason why Dead Ricky wants to kill her, is because she is fooling around too much.
And oh, totally.
He was nice enough to wear a condom. Did we mention how this is a Nightmare on Elm Street ripoff? So this is totally a rip off Nightmare on Elm Street, by the way.
Yeah,
of where
a video of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, not the whole plot of like him coming back for the kids in their dreams, but he comes back in her dreams in order to haunt her and kill her. So Dead Ricky, after all this shit happens, so many dream sequences, Dead Ricky just goes on a murdering rampage, killing doctors, killing people that mess with her, killing perverts, and he has all. He's doing all this with his half burnt face, with his beautiful hair, and his like neon outfit of his motorcycle or dirt bike outfit. This movie is fucking insane. It is so goofy. It is so great. It's got some really cool special effects at times, And it's just weird, and it's just a lot of fun, and just the deliveries on everybody, the editing is just so over the top, and it's really great. But you also watch it with the subtitles, because the subtitles help, because Intervision has fun with them, but it also makes you understand what the fuck is happening, because the dialogue is just so low in the movie. But
oh yeah,
honestly,
I had to switch my speakers to so everything. It's because it's mono, so everything goes through every single speaker just so I can hear what's going on.
So in this film, though, or out of these films from Severin and Intervision, this by far is over the top amazing. By far, probably my favorite.
Yeah,
Other than maybe Dark Waters. Dark Waters is in a serious play on a film note. But
I was gonna say, as far as the Intervision stuff, by far, I think Phobe was my favorite, and then Dreamstalker second. I need to see Death by Love now. So that's like, I give Shot on the Video stuff a lot of shit, but
yeah, you do.
I do, but I feel like Intervision, the releases on there are things that are worth watching just because of the bizarre. Remember, like, when we did Murder, Lust, and Project Nightmare, like, those weren't, I didn't really like those very much, but they're so bizarre that I had to, like, had fun watching them, you know?
Yeah.
So, definitely, it was a good time. And, like I said, the falling out of window sequence in Dreamstalker is in the pantheon now of favorite falling from window scenes ever. It's fantastic.
It's a great batch. I mean, if you have like 50 extra bucks, because that'd probably buy you everything here, which is insane. Well, not really 50, but like if you go to what are they selling? What am I selling these at Grindhouse Video? Let's see. Let's check this out. Let's plug. Well, this was our plug for Grindhouse Video now, so we don't have to do it later and you forget. So he's got some cool stuff. So you can get pretty much, Kathy's Curse for $17.99.
Yeah, it's about
good
to go
deal.
Right.
You know, Dark Waters $20. You're supporting the small timers here. So yeah, pick these up. He has pretty much everything in stock. It looks like
Dreamstalker Death by Love is $14.99. That's worth it.
You get it, there you go.
If you like some of the video stuff and bizarre flicks, you get a big bang for your buck. All right, we need to start wrapping up here, Brad. I did want to mention though, they recently released a Return of Kung Fu Trailers of Fury, another one of these Kung Fu trailers, Blu-rays. These are a lot of fun, throwing up parties, kind of having the background, a couple hours of like, it's like 35 trailers of Kung Fu flicks. These releases are a lot of fun. So, I had to give that a shout out as well. All right. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's show, everybody. Give out a huge thank you to Severin Films for keeping us in the loop with their flicks. Really do appreciate the everything that they do, and just being a label that's continually putting out great work. So check them out. It's I moved away from it because we went to grindhousevideo.com. But I was going to plug it. We'll have everything in the show notes. But Severin-Films.com. Not to be confused with a German manufacturing company or something. And there's another Severin that does something else. So Severin-Films. Yeah, they're not the proprietary floor care products company, nor are they the German electricity company. Or electric home appliance company. They are the film company, Severin Films. Bad joke. Sorry. God damn it, I'm failing.
Jesus Christ.
We want to, of course, thank our sponsors, GrindhouseVideo.com.
Can we just pre-record an ending?
No, this is fun. Coffee Shop of Horrors, use our code SCREAMCAST and get 10% off. Want to thank Wolfman of Mars for letting us use their tunes, and Kevin Spencer for giving us the visual presence online with our logo. And, of course, Vinegar Syndrome. We will be doing a Vinegar Syndrome episode
very soon. So keep your eye out for that. I want to thank all of our patrons. If you want to become a patron, go to patreon.com/scream_cast. We will be doing another late night very soon. So our $5 patrons, hopefully are getting a bang for their buck. I want to thank all of you guys for listening. We will talk to you next time.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.